Hi, this is Bob Wells here, and welcome to Undercurrent Stories. This is the show where we hear about people's interests and uncover some fascinating stories at the same time. I hope you enjoy today's show. Hello and welcome to Undercurrent Stories. Today I am in the county town of Rutland, called Oakham, which is actually the smallest county in England. And I've come to meet an old friend, my historian friend, Bill Cunningham, who's also a tour guide. And we're going to meet at the museum. Hopefully he's going to be here. It's an early February day. It's quite nice. It's about 10 degrees. I can see a little bit of sun above me. Not a lot, but hopefully enough to keep us warm as we travel round Oakham. So let's just see if Mr. Bill Cunningham is here. Hello, Bill. How are you?
Hello, Bob. How are you?
Been a long time.
Just a bit, yes. Just a while. Oh, great. Welcome to Oakham. Welcome to the county of Rutland, England's smallest county.
It is indeed. And I was doing a bit of Googling this morning. I see it's got about 40,000 inhabitants.
As many as that? Good grief. No, it's a very, very small county. It's only about 16 miles by 17 miles. It's a very, very small one. And its motto is Multum in Parvo, meaning much in little.
So, Bill, can you give us a brief introduction all about Oakham?
Oakham, as I say, it's the county town of Rutland, the smallest county in England. Although Rutland is the smallest county, it's got a big, big character to it. It goes right the way back to before the Norman Conquest, and it used to be the dowry or the domain of the Saxon queens of England. So the last Saxon queen of England was Queen Edith, and she is a wife of Edward the Confessor. And in fact, the village nearby called Edith Weston is named after her. So it's ancient county, been around a while, and the people here are very, very proud. The Rutlanders are called Raddlemen, and they have a great pride in their county. Back in 1974, you had the Pernicious Counties Act, which moved Rutland into the county of Leicestershire, amalgamated it, and parts of Yorkshire were lost and things like that. And the Rutlanders, the Raddlemen, never settled for that, and they fought for their independence and finally got it back in 1997, so being where it should be. Oakham, not a lot's happened here in the last 1,000 years. The railway is about the big thing that really did happen, but it's a pleasant, nice little county town, very rural, no industry, nice place to live, really.
It certainly looks it, Bill. Now, we're at the museum. Are we going to go into the museum?
Pop in, because on this little tour, as you probably find out when I do my tours, be it Stamford or Oakham, I do sometimes focus on the macabre and things really that a little bit off the beaten track.
So well, I do remember if that episode we did probably about 3 years ago now, Bill.
Yes.
And we looked at Stamford, and there was some definite macabre goings on in that one.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You haven't seen anything yet. Let's go.
Okay. So we're just going into the museum now. Hello, good morning. Hi. We're just doing a little podcast here, so... Right, it's not very busy in here yet, is it? Which is good.
Which is good, yes.
Yeah. So we're just going into the main museum itself. Ah, so we're coming up to a bar. Ruddle's Ales. Tell us about Ruddle's Ales, Bill.
Well, you're the beer man. Ruddle's a brewery.
Yeah, I drink it. I don't know much about the brewery.
It's from Rutland Breweries. What do you call it? Ruddle Ales. Yeah, they do a fair bit of brewing here. And no doubt we'll try some of it a bit later, after the podcast.
I certainly hope so. Oh, we're back out in the open now.
As you see, very rural, on the farm equipment and stuff. It's, you know, there's no real industry around here at all. We'll be talking about that chap later, Hugh Lowther, the 5th Earl of Lonsdale. Quite a character. So here we are, something quite unique. This is the only surviving example of a new drop gallows. This is an original gallows. It's portable, so you can take it apart and move it to where you want to hang. First built and used in 1813. Unfortunately, two unfortunate criminals who were burglars were both hung here in 1813. So it's a drop gallows, unusual. They used to have people put you on a cart and you sort of go in the cart to get executed. And on the way to the gallows, often the publicans would give you lots of drink when you're going along in the cart. And when you get to the end, you come off the wagon. The expression, off the wagon, that's where you go and get hung. You would be on a wagon and they, or on a horse or something, and they kick the horse and the horse would move away and you'd slowly strangle, or they'd just, you know, just push you off on the gallows. This one is different because it was more humane, believe it or not, because it's a drop gallows. So here we have...
More humane, but a similar ending.
Yes, sir. So here we have two doors laying there. You go up the steps, these steps, stand on the top, have the noose put round you, you see the noose just there, and pull a lever, and the doors drop down, and you fall, breaking your neck. And it's meant to be more humane because you didn't slowly strangle to death. Unfortunately, they didn't do the mathematics correctly, and the drop's not long enough, so the poor unfortunately did end up slowly strangling to death.
So if you're a tall person, yeah, you got no chance?
No chance. But rather macabre, as I say.
It's a bit of a sobering view, this.
And this has been obviously used. Last year was about 1837.
Yeah. That's not a nice thing to see, really, is it?
No. But good start for tour.
It is. Oh, thanks for that, Bill. That was sobering but interesting.
Interesting start. Gets your attention.
So where are we heading now?
What we're going to do now, we're just going to head to Mount Pleasant. We are walking along towards Mount Pleasant, which on the theme we've just had at the museum, was basically where they used to hang people. But this nice, splendid building here is the Rutland County Council offices. It used to be a hunting lodge for the Noel family. Noel family are local aristocrats. They were the Earls of Gainsborough. And hunting was very, very popular in Rutland, and still is. The main hunt round here is a Cottesmore, that's fox hunting. And there's two others, a beaver and the corn hunt. And if you look just carefully here, this is a hunting lodge of the family, the Noels. And down there you see a building there with bars on the bars on it.
Yeah.
Iron bars. That's where they used to keep the animals.
Okay. So presumably at one time this was actually set in its own grounds before the other buildings came.
Yeah, well, these have been here for a while. And the museum's been here since the late 1700s. And the hunting lodge was used by the aristocracy, particularly in the 19th century. You've got the cages for keeping the animals. And there's another building there, which is an old ice house as well.
And this is now the council building.
Now the council buildings.
It's nice to see that it's been put to good use.
Yeah. That building there by the museum is the old register office now. But it used to be occupied by a character called Hugh Lonsdale. He was the 5th Earl of Lonsdale. Hugh Lowther, actually, 5th Earl of Lonsdale. And he was a heck of a character. He lived in the late Victorian era, in early 20th century. And he was a great sportsman, big womaniser, a bit of a wide character, boxer, amateur athletics chap, massive hunter, and a big spendthrift too. He fell out with Queen Victoria because she thought he was leading her son Bertie, Prince of Wales, into bad ways with women. And he was also a Lord of the a member of the in Parliament. And in those days, the two parties, you had the Liberal Party and you had the Tory Party. Odd enough, in those days, the colours of the Tory Party were red, not blue, and the Liberals were blue. However, at the time, Hugh Lowther had a mistress called Violet, who was an actress, obviously, and one wag in the Houses of Parliament did say to him, well, you know, the Tories are red and the Liberals are blue, but we always know what colour Mr. Lonsdale has, and that is Violet. But he was, as I say, a big character, big hunter, great sportsman, and he also, his favourite colour was yellow. He had his servants dress in bright yellow, he had his car in yellow, he had his horse trap in yellow, and he founded the AA. And what colour are the colour of the AA?
Yellow. That's an interesting story.
Guess what his nickname was? The Yellow Earl. Very popular character, larger than life. However, now, oddly enough, last year I took a group of ladies from a women's institute on a tour of Oakham, and one of the elder ladies came up to me at the end of the tour, because I was talking about Hugh Lowther, Earl of Lonsdale, what a great character he was, and she said he wasn't a great character, because her father was the butler for him. And you talk about a long time ago, she is very elderly, and she said her parents had her when they were quite a bit older. And said he wasn't a very nice man, because her father had a grace and favour house, and when he ceased service with the Earl, he ended his service on Christmas Eve, and he didn't leave the property till Boxing Day, and he should have left on Christmas Eve, and the Earl took him to court, and so he had to stand trial because of it. So it was a nasty piece of work in the end.
Bill, where did you get to hear all these stories about these various people?
I'm just a sad individual who reads lots of books and doesn't get out a lot, really. Now, we're walking along to Mount Pleasant. Mount Pleasant was where they used to have the gallows until they set up the new jail in town. And we're coming to a bridge over a river, a very small river, and it's called Swooning Bridge. Being slightly down into a very slight valley, then it goes up to Mount Pleasant, and there's Swooning Bridge going over the river. And it's called Swooning Bridge, supposedly, because in years gone by, young men would take their young ladies for a nice walk along here to Mount Pleasant. And they get to this point by the bridge, and then the young ladies get sight of some body hanging from the gallows. Then they'd swoon into the arms of their young man. How romantic. Just what you want to do with a girlfriend. Really take
I was going to say, it's not a very nice sight to see on a walk. So we're walking along a very nice road with some lovely properties.
And we're coming up to the bridge. One of the major public schools of England is actually here at Oakham, Oakham School, and that was founded by Reverend Johnson in 1594. And it still works now. And in the 18th century, they had a headmaster called Dr. Doncaster. And he felt that his pupils, young men, should know the difference between right and wrong. So whenever you had an execution, he'd give the boys the morning off, so they could come and watch the hanging. And they come along here, and they had a special bench right at the front of the gallows, so they get a good view. And that's a boy's treat for the for a day out. And they get here to Swooning Bridge, and they often wait before the execution started. And the headmaster, Dr. Doncaster, thought that they should know the difference between right and wrong and what happens if you stray. And hence they get the time off. Which, whether you get that in the national curriculum now, I don't know. So, but when they'd often stop here at Swooning Bridge, and here we are at Swooning Bridge, and the boys would stop here and wait for the hanging, and if you notice, they carved their names into the walls here.
Oh wow, and they're still here?
Yeah.
That is quite amazing.
There's one, S. Inkin, 1831.
Yeah.
Another 1828.
It looks like a Cunningham there, is that? Cumming.
Yeah. No relation.
Yeah.
And so here we are after, but rather macabre, really.
It's quite amazing that they're still intact.
Yeah.
And they haven't been sort of sanded off or something.
Mm. And just there, you can see the incline as it goes up towards Mount Pleasant. That.
More engravings?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, let's just pop. So we're just crossing the road, just waiting for the traffic to go, so we can see some more of these historic engravings. Actually, there's not a lot of room, Bill, across here, is there?
No, there's not, no.
Right, okay, off we go.
A bit of a compliment, more like a trickle.
Yeah, really. It's a bit of a stream, isn't it, really?
Yeah,
right, so so we've got more engravings here. Just starting to wear off, I guess, by the traffic throwing up debris and stuff. Excellent. Very interesting. Field House. That looks relatively new, Bill.
It certainly is. Very nice, though.
Rutland was voted one of the best counties to live.
It certainly is, and when you see a nice town like Oakham, you're very tempted. It's convenient for communications, a very quaint railway station here, the crime rate's very low, you're near Rutland Water, which is a huge, great big inland reservoir, which is great for recreation. It ticks a lot of boxes.
And I've noticed a lot of tweed jackets and Waitrose shops and ducks crossing the road.
Yes. It's as I say, it's a centre of English fox hunting, in actual fact, although it's illegal now. And
are you in contact with any other historians at all?
Yes and no. I'm a guide at a stately home nearby called Burley House. A lot of my fellow guides there are art historians or have a passion for history. I do come across people in that respect, but no professional historians or anything like that. I'm just an enthusiastic amateur, really.
Yeah, well, you certainly know your stuff, Bill.
Yes, well, as I say, I don't get out much.
So you retired from the corporate world a few years ago, did you?
I retired 3 years ago, and I took up my hobby of history. So I do tours of Stamford, and I do tours of Oakham, and I'm a guide in a Burley House, which is one of the major stately homes in England, a huge Elizabethan property outside Stamford.
And how did you find the transition from sort of working in the corporate world to becoming a tour guide and historian?
Very easy. Loved every minute of it. And I work for my pleasure rather than work to pay bills. It's a much nicer situation. And I enjoy the research and looking into digging things up and what have you. Currently I'm writing with another fellow guide, we're writing a specialist tour of Stanford, which will focus on the nasty underbelly of Stanford involving the murderers, the criminals, and the less savoury characters of the town.
This seems to be your forte, Bill, with the sort of rather macabre subjects.
Yes, it is really, isn't it? No, it's amusing, really. It's I quite like reading about things like that.
One thing I've noticed with you, Bill, is that you're it's quite unique in as much as you're more into finding out about people and the stories behind people rather than, you know, architecture and the history of when something was built.
Yeah. Oh, certainly. I'm aware of the architecture and the history and the art and the various artists and what have you. But I like the people side of things. So in a stately home, I'm concentrating the family, you know.
Yeah, and I think that's good because it sort of brings things alive to people, doesn't it?
Yes, yeah. And, you know, the aristocracy in particular are absolutely quite fascinating. You don't need to sort of make fiction about them. They're wider and greater than fiction. And you read about the families, their lives, how they do things, what they've been up to. It is actually quite fascinating, really.
So never dull the aristocracy stories.
Oh, definitely not. Definitely not.
Okay, so we're back in the middle of the town, or nearly at the middle of the town. Where are we off to now, Bill?
We're just going to have a quick look at this property. There's a bit of a theme coming through of crime and punishment, which is quite important within Oakham, because you've still got quite a few relics of the judicial system, shall we say. So here's a splendid building here, lovely classical building, early 18th century, that's early 1800s, called Yew House, and owned by the Knoll family, owned by the Knoll family, again these local aristocrats were the Earls of Gainsborough and have a splendid property at nearby Exton, which is a lovely village with a fine pub, and this is the house where the judge would stay.
Yeah.
Oakham has a court, and it's inside Oakham Castle, and it's I think maybe one of the oldest, if not the oldest court in England. It's been going since the 12th century.
Wow, and that's still going?
Yep, it's still going. They have to have a trial once every 2 years to make sure they keep their licence. Yeah. And in years gone by, Yule House is where the judge would stay. In those days, the judges would travel around the country on the circuit. And what they do, they stay in this lovely property. There'll be a 24-hour police guard outside of it. And the morning of the trial, the sheriff would come here to escort the judge to the castle where the court is. If it was a trial which wasn't be a capital offence, i.e. a hanging trial, the sheriff would present the judge with white gloves, so he knew he wouldn't be having to do any executions that day. And was escorted to...
Well, that must have been quite a relief for the person that was being judged.
Just a bit, yes.
So where are we off to now, Bill?
We're going to go up Mill Street, where oddly enough, used to be a mill.
Strange, that.
And we'll touch on another bit of macabre things from history.
So it looks like we're coming into the town centre now.
We are, yes. Yeah, and it's market day today, so they've got the traditional market stalls out. There's been a market here for many, many centuries. Used to be inside the church. Then the church got fed up with that, then they moved outside the church. But not too far from the church, so God can obviously... spread his glory over the market.
Yeah, I have to say, I can see one or two pubs, and as it's a Saturday lunchtime, I think we could always go for a beer.
I think that's no think about it, really. This building here that you just pointed out, the Angler, now a pub, used to be the splendidly named Miss Eliza Charity's Home for Young Ladies. And she set that up in the late 18th century. And oddly enough, it morphed into a maternity home for the ladies in the end. And they used to, actually put straw in the street outside to muffle the noise from the carriages going by. But I love that name, Eliza Charity.
Eliza Charity.
School for Young Ladies. Excellent. This old church here, hairdressers, inside there's a memorial to a chap called John Lyons. John Lyons was a local farmer, a respectable man, father of seven children, and he was lived at the time of Queen Elizabeth I, and he is what you call a recusant, A recusant in those days was actually a Catholic who refused to attend Church of England services. And he was a strict Catholic and refused to acknowledge the authority of Queen Elizabeth over the church. And he kept up with his refusal. He went on trial and he was found guilty. He would not recant in any way. He's found guilty and was found to be executed, as it was at the time. This is 1599. And he made a great impression at the trial. The judge found him a decent man, but he had to find him guilty. And John Lyons was taken to Mount Pleasant in July 1599, where he suffered a traitor's death, which was unfortunately to be drawn and quartered.
Simply by not going to a Protestant church?
Correct, yeah. He refused to acknowledge Queen Elizabeth as being head of the church. So he became a Catholic martyr.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was executed at Mount Pleasant in 1599. However, the thing about him was he's such a highly respected man. The judge at the trial found him a great man. And the chaplain who looked after him and also was present at the execution was so moved by John Lyons' piety that he ended up converting to Catholicism. And he actually went to Rome, but he made the mistake of coming back to England, where he was found guilty of being a Catholic, and he also suffered a traitor's death. So John Lyons is one of the English martyrs. Quite a splendid character. I'd like to find out a bit more about him.
Yeah,
really,
but
you know, it's staggering to think because of that you get
some very sad stories there.
Yes,
Bill.
Yeah. So on that happy note, we'll cross over.
Yeah. Do you have any cheerful? Sort of.
I'll try to get to
I suppose worry. The maternity thing is quite cheerful, isn't
yes.
it?
Here we are coming out into the street through the old gateway for the coach and horses, and here we have the front of the Crown Hotel, and sadly no longer a hotel. It had many great guests and people staying here. One of whom came here in 1824. He was a great Lord Byron. Came here in 1824. Unfortunately, he was dead at the time. He came in his coffin. He was due to be buried at Westminster Abbey, but the church would not allow it, because in those days the church actually disapproved of incest sex with multiple partners of either sex, and he had to be buried at his home estate of Hucknall. The coffin stopped here on its way and stayed overnight. The rumour goes that the next stop was at Melton Mowbray, which was the hometown of one of his mistresses, Lady Caroline Lamb, who once described Byron as being mad, bad and dangerous to know. And the story goes that when she inquired who was in the coffin, she was told it was Lord Byron, and allegedly that's when it tipped over into insanity. So here, opposite here, we have a building which is now a key-cutting shop. This is the site of the birthplace of one of England's most notorious rogues and liars, a chap called Titus Oates. He was born here in 1649, an Oakham man, and he grew up to be an extremely unpleasant man and a great liar. His father was a clergyman. He trained for the clergy, I think went to Oxford or Cambridge, one of those universities, but left without getting a degree, but he still claimed he was a proper reverend vicar anyway.
That was one of his first lies?
Yeah, first lies, yeah. Pretend to be a vicar, and he got various jobs. He dismissed quite regularly from them. He was a very nasty character. He started his lying career out when he moved to Hastings, worked in Hastings, and he fancied the job of the local headmaster. And so what he did, he accused the local headmaster of the school of sodomy with the pupils. Out-and-out lie. He was found out for it and had to flee to London, then fled overseas in the boat, went to overseas. They trained as a Catholic priest. He didn't qualify for that, but that didn't stop him. Came back to England, and then he set up a thing called the Popish Plot. And what he did, he accused various senior members of the establishment of being secret Catholics or plotting to kill the king as part of a great Popish conspiracy. He's a very, very good liar, and he had a couple of accomplices, and a very nasty piece of work, because these men, he convinced the judges and convinced the authorities that these men were in fact Catholic spies and rogues, and many of them suffered the traitor's death.
What was the motivation for doing that?
He had loads of money. And he was set up with a big pension. He had a £1,200 a year pension off the government. So he made a lot of money out of it, as did some of his associates. And the lying continued. And again, many people suffered the traitor's death, which, you know, was absolutely appalling. Mm. And he got too big for his boots in the end. And he made a big mistake of accusing the Queen of conspiracy. And then when he had his pension stopped and he was evicted from his house, he then accused the King and the King's brother of treason, which wasn't a good thing to do. So he ended up in...
What were they supposed to have done that was treason?
In consort with the French and secret Catholics and what have you. James was, in fact, a Catholic anyway. But when King James came onto the throne in 1685, King James then, who was a Catholic, actually put him on trial. He was then found guilty, imprisoned for life. But prior to that, he was whipped from Newgate to Aldgate, and he was sentenced to be whipped around London four or five times a year. He was put in the pillory, which was not a nice thing in those days. So though they didn't execute him, they made his life so miserable. Sure fact, but then when King William, the Protestant William, came back to the throne, he actually exonerated Titus Oates, and he got a pension again. But one of England's greatest rogues, I would say. How could you actually say these things about people and knowing they're very likely to be executed in the most hideous manner?
Yeah. Oakham certainly has its selection of interesting people, Bill.
That's right. And I mentioned earlier about the school, Oakham School, founded by Dr. Reverend Johnson in 1594. And here we have the school crest.
Oh, right.
So up here, above this door here, we've got the school crest. And you see a very elderly Dr. Reverend Johnson there, sat on his seat with his writing implements. And there's six children. You've got four boys with the trousers. And then you've got two boys wearing dresses. That's not cross-dressing. They're boys, because up to about the age of 10, boys would wear dresses. And then at age of 10, they're what they call breeched. And therefore, they're allowed to wear breeches.
Yeah,
and that's when they're. And you know the reason why boys had to wear dresses when they're very young?
I've no idea, Bill.
Because the devil was only interested in kidnapping the souls of little boys, not interested in little girls. So disguise them as a little girl, you're okay. In those days, up until the 1970s, Oakham School was male only, for boys only. Then it went co-ed in the 1970s, and the girls of the school treat this as being an omen.
So we're just looking yeah. down at a manhole cover.
I know what it says, Thomas Crapper. This is from the great Thomas Crapper, who invented the water closet, I believe, in the 19th century. His patrons were the Prince of Wales and his mistress, Lily Langtry. And here we have a manhole cover, which no doubt leads to the sewers, made by the great Thomas Crapper. It's amazing what little things you find when you walk around.
Bill, you do need to get out more.
I do need to get out more. And you see...
Interesting story, nevertheless.
And as you walk around Rutland or any place in Oakham or Rutland, you'll see lots and lots of horseshoes. Horseshoes are the symbol of the county symbol. And above that building there, you see a horseshoe.
A
very big horseshoe. And notice it's unusual because it's facing the wrong way round. Normally you have a horseshoe with the pointy bits facing up. The reason why the Rutland one has the pointy bits facing down is so the devil can't make a nest in the horseshoe. He'd fall out.
That's interesting. And that's unique to Rutland.
I don't know whether. I'm sure somebody else.
Walking up a semi-cobbled street here, up to the castle.
Yeah, we're going to go through the castle gate, cross over what used to be the moat. And the gate was constructed by a chap called Villiers, the Duke of Buckingham. And a local lord and magnate, and he was made famous in Dumas's novel The Three Musketeers, because Buckingham was meant to be the lover of the French queen.
Ah, right.
And he was murdered by Lady de Winter. In actual reality, Buckingham was a favourite and possibly the lover of King James I, and then went on to possibly be the lover of King Charles
I. So this is the castle, or what remains of the castle?
You can see all around here, inside the castle enclosure, which is about, 2 acres in extent. And you can see the earthworks all the way around.
Yeah.
Up there you have the Old Motte, which is an earth mound, and that would have been built by William the Conqueror. And then in subsequent years they built the walls around it. There used to be bastions here. And we have here the hall, the castle hall. Rutland wasn't really a very violent county, and so basically this is like a fortified administration centre. It was constructed, this building here is probably the finest example of Norman architecture north of the Alps. It's a complete Norman hall, currently used as a court, and you see from the outside it's got splendid carvings in it. At the top there you've got On the roof, you've got Samson wrestling a lion. On the left-hand side, you've got, which is a griffin. On the other side, these carving statues, carved by the Norman carvers. And the thing about this place is that the actual men who constructed this were the same men who constructed Canterbury Cathedral. What happened was the mason, William de Sons, at Canterbury Cathedral, injured himself, and he couldn't work. And to rather than have his men do nothing, one of his apprentices, called William the Englishman, was given the templates, and they came up here and they constructed this.
So what year was this built?
You're talking about the late 1100s.
And when was the castle built?
Over time. Just after conquest, you had the motte, which is the mound. And then over the years, bits would be added to it.
So was this within the castle grounds at the time?
Yes, it is, still is.
So it's the only... but the rest of the castle's come down, isn't it?
It's come down. You see fragments of masonry around. So as you go around, when you go around the other side, you'll be able to see fragments of masonry and things like that. But this is fully functional. It's used, and it's still used as a court.
It's in amazing condition, isn't it?
Yeah. And the carvings inside are absolutely fabulous. And also, what you will see inside are horseshoes. The hundreds of
more horseshoes.
More horseshoes. And they have a rule whereby when you have a titled person or a nobleman comes to visit here, they have to present a horseshoe. So we have horseshoes going back to Edward IV. You have obviously more recent ones from the late Queen Elizabeth. And loads of horseshoes and various magnates and aristocrats as their forfeit. 2 years ago, I took a party from the British Senate around here. And unbeknownst to me, one of the ladies in the party was actually Baroness. And we obviously forgot to tell her she needed to bring a horseshoe. It was a shocking thing to do. So when we go inside, you'll see a lot of carvings, fantastic carvings all around the walls, lots of horseshoes, and the actual court itself. You've got the judge's seat, the dock.
And this is still used as a court.
And the cells, yeah. They have to use it once a year. It's not a magistrate court, it's a proper assizes court. And I think, I'm not sure, no doubt one of your listeners will contradict me, possibly the oldest functioning court in England.
Wow.
And still got the cells as well, which will lock you in as well.
Yep. So we're just going into the court itself.
Hello, Joe.
Hello. Right. Yeah, look at all the horseshoes.
All the horseshoes everywhere. And look at the carvings here. There's a beautiful one over there, which is a lady with a bride's scold on it. Women who talk too much would have a sort of a mask put on them. So,
hi, Joe, how are you doing?
I'm very well. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Very well.
Yeah, you're looking very dapper.
Oh. He always does. He's got his own brand, isn't he? Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm here with Bob. We're doing a podcast. We did one at Stanford about 2 years ago. We did a podcast now, so taking him around, doing bits of what we're doing with tour part of anything else.
Yeah.
Is it okay we just?
It's okay if we talk a little bit, is it?
Yeah.
Of course it is.
I don't know much about it. I just sort of think about horseshoes and stuff.
He's very...
I'm sure he does. He's done his homework.
Of course. I would say we're quite busy in the cafe area, so we'll probably hold off on that.
What I might do, I might explain when I get outside.
Feel free. Yeah,
yeah, thanks very much. So we look as though we've got some pews here, Bill.
Yes. As I said, this is a functioning court. So you've got the seats for the spectators, the judge's seat, the dock for the criminal, just over there. And as I say, once every 2 years they have to hold a court here.
Yeah.
And you say splendid carvings all the way around. This is quality carvings here.
Yeah.
As I say, they would be if they're the men who made Canterbury Cathedral.
Yeah.
And this is, again, fully functioning. You have this lovely character over here. So I do like my characters.
You do, you do.
This here is a rather dreamy looking gentleman here. There's a statue, a bust of this gentleman here, and that's the Right Honourable Finch, who's an MP, local magnate and landowner. He died in 1907, and he was the father of the house, and he served as the MP for Rutland for 40 years.
Wow.
He was known as the silent MP, because in 40 years he never said a word in Parliament. And when you look at him, he's got rather drooping eyelids. Yeah. He looked rather vain.
He's asleep most of the time,
He's probably asleep most of the time, but a splendid thing. And here we have all the horseshoes around.
Yeah.
And there's loads and loads of aristocrats here. You can spot the names. Key ones are on the other side there. We got one which was from at the top here. The other side, you've got Prince of Wales. You've got one from Edward IV. You've got the late Queen. And all
so
loads of
every
Lord
time
ladies.
They visited here, they had to bring
a horseshoe as a presentation.
Mm. And what was the reason for that?
This castle was built, and at one point in time, it was gifted by the king, or leased by the king to the Ferriers, a Norman family called the Wakeland Ferriers family. The first one was Wakeland de Ferriers, and de Ferriers came from Normandy, and Ferriers is the French word for a blacksmith. So what you have then is that a bit of play on words, really. So you bring a horseshoe.
But here, and are they still having to do it? People
oh yes,
still do it.
Yes, yeah, yeah. So if the king came here, if the king came here, he needs to bring a horseshoe.
It's quite amazing how these traditions just carry on.
They do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it goes back to the Ferriers family. They're no longer in control.
Just to prove this is a proper function.
Condemned. 68 prisoners were condemned to death by the courts in this building. So we're coming up to what looks like
a jail cell.
Wow. So we're just looking through a little square in the door. Oh, right. I think it's been used as a store now, but it's certainly a very small...
Well, they're cleared out ready for... Yeah, this is still used as a court. So
wow.
here's your cells.
Yeah. No heating in there, Bill.
Certainly not. No toilet either.
No.
So here we are in the markets of Oakham. This market is the Buttercross, which is a fine old 16th century building, and they've got the Shambles on the other side of the marketplace. Shambles is an old English term for a meat market. Some of the old Anglo-Saxon Fleischer shelves, literally meat shelves, and it's merged into Shambles.
Oh,
so
okay.
You get old English towns. It's the Buttercross.
The Buttercross.
And this is on the theme of crime and punishment. Here we go.
Yeah.
We have the Buttercross here.
Why is it called a Buttercross?
It's a butter market.
Oh, some stocks.
Set of stocks. And what's unusual about this set of stocks? It's got five leg rooms in it.
It has.
So why is that? Absolutely no idea. So it's a fine set of stocks. What happened was in 1509, the law was passed in which every small town or village would have to have a set of stocks put up to stop beggars. Because you're only allowed to beg in your own parish. And if you drifted outside and begged in another parish, you could end up in the stocks. And the stocks, you'd sit down. The stocks were until you sit down and your legs go through the holes in the stocks. And you were kept there, and obviously people could throw filth and all sorts of things.
So just to be clear, you'd have been sitting here.
You sat here.
Yeah.
And you got
your legs would have gone through here.
Seat, which is on the Buttercross itself.
Yeah.
And above the Buttercross, you'd see this old Collie Weston roof on it, open to the elements.
Collie Weston?
For listeners, Collie Weston Slate is a village, Collie Weston, about 10 miles from here. And the old buildings around here were done in Collie Weston Slate. Collie Weston Slate was mined, it wasn't quarried. And what they do, the miners would go underground and they pull out these great logs, lumps of stone. And the stone would be left out over winter. Several winters. When it's really cold, frosty night, the miners would come out and pour water onto the logs, and then after time they'd fracture, and from that they'd create the slates. Yeah. And the 27 different sizes of slate, and each one's got its own different name.
How long would somebody be in the stocks for?
It would vary with the crime, sometime a matter of hours and maybe a day. If you persisted in offending, you move from the stocks to the pillory. We don't have an example of a pillory here. Pillory is where you stand up.
Sorry, just before we go on to the pillory. So the people would be, the guys would be in these stocks.
Yep, men and women.
And then passers-by would what?
Throw stuff at them, mock them, humiliate them.
Yeah.
They can't run away. No. But they've got their hands free to actually cover their faces if people throw filth and excrement at them. Pillory is a different ball game.
Right.
So once you keep offending, you move from the stocks and then be if you carried on offending, you go in the pillory. And the pillory is when you stand up, and you have your arms put and your head put through a block. And so you cannot move your arms and you cannot move your head. That's a different ball game. Mm. Like, A, you stood up, and B, the passers-by could throw things at you, but you could not defend yourself because you could not move your arms. And pillow is very, very nasty. You get very, very tired, and what they'd often do is nail your ears to the wood. Ooh. So your head could drop down.
Oh.
Very nasty. People would die in the pillory.
And would people throw things like stones at
you? Yes.
Wow, it's pretty dangerous.
There
stuff,
would be deaths. There was several. You have quite a few deaths.
And what about in the stocks? Would they throw stones at people in stocks?
You might well do, but you got your hands to protect yourself.
Yeah.
The pillory you couldn't. So quite a few. There was a case in London where a man was put in the pillory, and his enemies came along and literally kicked him to death.
Mm.
And that could happen. And then if you went beyond that and carried on offending, you'd obviously end up on Mount Pleasant.
Yeah. Hopefully, you'd learn the lesson.
I'd like to think so.
Or go back to your own parish.
Very much so. Here we have an interesting dividing line. This is Coots Lane. Now, Rutland was the domain and the dowry of the Saxon queens of England. So the last queen was Queen Edward the Confessor's wife, Queen Edith. She lived about 10 years after 1066. And when she died, because William the Conqueror let her keep her lands, because he got on well with her. But when she died, what happened to Oakham was, the bit that she held became Lord's Hold. In other words, it went back to the king.
Yeah.
And that was held by the king. It's called the Lord's Hold, because the king would appoint a lord to run that part of town. And this is the dividing line. So where the markets are and the castle is, that's Lord's Hold. On the other side here is Dean's Home, because the other part of Oakham was owned by the Deans of Westminster Abbey in London.
Oh, right.
And obviously that wasn't affected by the conquest, so yeah. It's in two halves.
Two halves, yeah.
And the Lord's Home is a richer half,
yeah.
Because it's got all the markets. This is All Saints Church, wonderful old church. This goes back to the 1300s. It's been quite heavily modernised in Victorian times. The graveyard's been totally changed. The gravestones have been taken down and removed. It's all been levelled. The top, the very top there, you've got to see the weather vane at the very, very top. It's one of the oldest weather vanes in England.
Is it?
Called Cock Peter. And it said it was up there since the winds did flow, did blow fair from Agincourt. So it's been up there a long time.
It has, hasn't it? And that's the original one.
Yeah, yeah. And you've got lots of fine
looks
gargles.
Remarkably good condition.
Yes, it is. It's got some bullet holes in it. Not from the Civil War. Someone used it for target practice once.
Out of war?
Nothing to do with the Civil War, yeah. Okay. And you've got lovely gargoyles.
Is there, it's all about the Civil War. Is there any evidence of things that happened here at the Civil War time?
Not really, no. Nothing really happened here until the railways opened up. And here you've got splendid examples of gargoyles above the entrance to the church.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And of course, if you're a really bad, evil person, you'd end up being a gargoyle. A bit like when you look at the top of church spire, sometimes they've got crotchets coming out, little knobbly bits coming out the top of the spire. That's to stop the devil sliding down the spire.
We're leaving the church. Where are we off to now?
We're going to head off to see the cottage of another interesting character.
Okay.
Unlike nearby Stamford, there's not so many stone buildings.
No,
but
I've noticed
that. It is an ancient town. It goes back to Saxon times.
Yeah.
Oakham means Ocker's farm in Old English. So it's been around for quite
who was
time.
Ocker?
Some Saxon.
Right, that's it is Ocker's farm.
When it's ham, that means farm.
Yeah.
And it denotes it's a Saxon town.
Oh, okay.
It goes back to, actually goes back beyond that to the ancient Britons. Catmows is one of the streets in Oakham is named Catmows. That's an ancient British name. So it does go back quite some time.
Yeah. So we're just heading towards the station.
It's a lovely old station at Oakham. And one of its little features, because I say I don't get out much, a bit of a nerd, is the signal box. And
which I can see now.
There's that fine signal. It's a Grade 2 listed building, built in 1901 with a Welsh slate roof and a combination of iron and wooden structure. And in the 1950s, Airfix and Hornby used it as a model for their train sets for doing signal
boxes. They
modelled
the model on that particular...
Well,
that's interesting. It looks like a very old bridge that we're going to go across.
Yeah, all painted lovely red and white.
Yep.
And as I say, I used to have a train set when I was a child. Still got it, actually, Hornby Dublo. And I don't have the signal box, unfortunately.
No.
The bridge is beautiful iron bridge, red and white.
I do vaguely remember that signal box. It's what you would consider to be a traditional signal box.
Yeah, it looks like a good old-fashioned signal. And it's a Grade 2 listed building.
Yes.
Come to the house of a very interesting Oakham character. And his name was Geoffrey Hudson. And he was a local man. And this is his cottage here. A lovely, charming thatched cottage, very oldie-worldy, regrettably on the main road. And Geoffrey Hudson was the son of the Oakham pie maker, butcher and pie maker. And the story goes that the Duke of Buckingham, the Villiers was his name, was entertaining King Charles I and his wife Henrietta Maria. And Geoffrey Hudson's father put him in a pie and put the pie on the table in front of the King and Queen. Geoffrey Hudson jumped out of the pie. And the story goes, Henrietta Maria was so infatuated with him that she actually took him down to court in London. And he went down to court and he did very, very well. And he's featured in a lot of the portraits by the great Van Dyck.
And he came out of a pie.
He came out of a pie. Yes, he came out of a pie, hopefully He hadn't been cooked in the pie, or the words of a short story. Yeah, and he went down to London, and he was with her. Obviously, he had the Civil War came along in the 1640s, and he went with the Queen to France, and he was exiled with her in France. He was a very fiery character, he was about 2 foot tall, very, very short. Very fiery character. You don't mess with him, because he once killed a man in a duel. A man insulted him about his height, and so they had a duel, and he shot the man dead. A bit unfair, really, because it's quite a short, small target, really.
A short duel.
That's right. And he was actually, coming back to England, he was captured by Barbary pirates. Because you must remember, in those days, the Barbary pirates would raid the Channel and the south of England to get slaves. And quite an unusual thing, but we don't talk about it now. A lot of Barbary pirates capture slaves from England and Cornwall. He was captured, taken to the Barbary coast. I was a slave in Barbary for 25 years.
Was he?
He returned to Oakham, oddly enough, and died in Oakham here. He actually was a knight of the realm. He became Sir Geoffrey Hudson. So a local man who did good, apart from 25 years on the Barbary coast.
So Geoffrey Hudson, is it anything to do with the Geoffrey Hudson bitter from Oakham Ales?
We mentioned, brewing in Oakham.
Yeah.
JHB, a local beer, is Geoffrey Hudson's beer.
Well, it's getting to that time again, Bill.
It is. Mm. It's
certainly. So where are we going next?
Get that pub.
Okay.
Very pretty street, actually. Used to be called Dead Man's Street, because it's where the coffins would go on the way to the church for burial. Okay. And it used to be the slum quarter of that Oakham.
The slum quarter?
Yeah, but you have to really walk down. It's a lovely, lovely bit of street.
So Bill, it's been fantastic having you on the show. I think I've certainly learnt a lot, and I hope listeners will have enjoyed. I think listeners will have enjoyed listening to some of the stories. So thanks ever so much.
Yeah, my apologies, it was a bit gruesome in parts. But the thing about history is you can't sanitise it.
Where can people find out more about you and what you do, Bill?
I work as a Stamford Guides, Stamford Guided Tours, and my email address is bill.d.cunningham@gmail.com.
Well, that's great, Bill. I'll put that on the show notes so that people can see your contact details. Thanks ever so much.
Thank you very much, Bob. Thank you. Let's go and get a pint.
You have been listening to Undercurrent Stories. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Please feel free to share the show link to your friends and family. And if you have 60 seconds, I will be most grateful if you would please rate and review. To hear more episodes, please subscribe to the show and visit undercurrentstories.com. If you leave your email in the link, we will notify you as soon as new episodes are released. Also, check out our social media links, details of which can be found on the show notes. Until next time, this is Bob Wells wishing you all the very best.